Women's health needs, and especially our hormonal needs, are finally receiving the attention we've deserved for years. And Hormone Harmony, a new sponsor of SelfWork, rates as one of the top five hormonal supplement companies out there. If you're a young woman struggling with that week before your period when moods can be all over the place, and I certainly don't miss that, or older when you're so glad menopause is here, but if you're like me, you sometimes stare at yourself in the mirror and ask, where did I go? Hormone Harmony has become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Basically, if you breathe in and out slowly twice, that's the amount of time it takes for one more woman to understand she can reach out for help, no matter what her age, through Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. This is SELFWORK, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At SELFWORK, we'll discuss psychological and emotional issues common in today's world and what to do about them. I'm Dr. Margaret, and SELFWORK is a podcast dedicated to you taking just a few minutes today for your own SELFWORK. Welcome or welcome back to SELFWORK. I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford, a clinical psychologist here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I'm so glad you're here. Today, we have two things happening that are fresh and exciting on SELFWORK. The first is announcing a new sponsor, Athletic Greens. I'm truly thrilled about their presence here because of what their product has done for my own health and well-being. So before we get to our conversation with our guest author for today, let me share with you what this very special product is offering to SELFWORK listeners. When Athletic Greens reached out to me, I of course said I'd need to try the product, and I was actually shocked. It tastes great with cold water, and I felt more focused. I've had better digestion and energy. Even my non-health conscious husband is loving it. Let me give you some facts. They call it a life-changing nutritional habit. To me, it's like giving yourself a gift every morning. It contains 75 vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced ingredients, including probiotics and something called adaptogens. It fits all kinds of diets and has less than 1 gram of sugar, and it's easy. One scoop in the morning, and you can do away with so many of those other expensive supplements that you swallow every night. And because I said a fervent yes to their sponsorship, you can visit athleticgreens.com/selfwork, and along with the product, you'll receive a free year supply of vitamin D3, and most of us are deficient, and K2 in one tiny drop, as well as 5 convenient travel packs. Again, go to athleticgreens.com/selfwork and experience it yourself. You know, I always focus on what you can do about it, and Athletic Greens fits the bill. The second event that's making this 225th episode of SELFWORK special is my very unique and inspiring guest, Jenny Lawson. If you haven't read her hilarious books, she's more than open about her emotional and mental struggles with chronic mental illness, including severe social anxiety and chronic debilitating, at times, depression. So debilitating that for months, she's often been dysfunctional. In her new book, Broken in the Best Possible Way, she makes you laugh until you don't think you can laugh anymore about her battles with insurance, her autoimmune disorders, the destructive side effects of medicine, of wacky, funny things that go on between herself and her husband, and many embarrassing side stories of what her life is really like. Her memory's shot, she loses crap all the time. She has a fascination with weird animal creatures, especially stuffed ones. And the graphic on the front of the book says it all, as every day she hauls around a huge horned animal as her mental and physical illnesses weigh her down. But she's also very quick to say that she's grown from having them. She wouldn't wish this path of learning on anyone, but it's been quite a path. I'm humbly honored and pleased to have her here at SELFWORK. So I introduce you to Jenny Lawson. Hey, Jenny.
How are you?
I am doing so great. I've been waiting a long time to meet you, actually. So I am thrilled. So, you know, I know you probably don't have a lot of time, but what I like to do with people is I'm a psychologist and a therapist, and I like to read your book from cover to cover, which I did this weekend. And I pick out quotes that kind of say, I don't know, they just catch my eye about something I might like to ask you about. So, okay, the first one that I was really so struck by, this book seemed to me to be a little more that you were reaching out more to people in a really intimate way. I don't know if that was pandemic oriented or something, because I'll say something about your quotes. First, there was something when you were talking about your memory issues. Know that I'm okay with not having that memory right now, because the me that holds it tight is keeping it safe and uncorrupted and glorious. And she loves you and I do too. Ah, that was just so beautiful. And then the second one really struck me. Right now, as you read this, you are alone, you gorgeous solitary creature, but I am with you. We share this paragraph and these words. And even if you don't agree with me, you are listening and we have connected in small and large ways. And in that way, we are not alone. We are together. So was that a special focus of this book, or am I off track?
No, it really was, because I had a lot of issues with isolation in the last 5 years. And I think like a lot of people can really deal with that now in the last year. But mine started a little earlier, just because I was dealing a lot with agoraphobia and, yes, you know, just a lot of anxiety that kind of made me feel isolated even when I was surrounded by people. And mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, a lot of this book was me just reaching out in the only way that I could.
It was remarkable. I mean, I'd be reading along and then all of a sudden here would come these words that were very intentionally meant to pull, I felt like, to pull the reader into a world where you said, hey, listen, I get you. And I love you. I mean, it was this direct outpouring of caring. If you wanted it to come across, it came across.
Oh, well, that is really nice. You know, I'm very, very lucky in that I have a really wonderful community of people on the internet where whenever I feel very, very alone, I go on Twitter and be like, someone tell me that I'm going to get through this. You know, someone tell me that that this is going to pass, because I know it is. I know depression lies, but I just need someone else to say it out loud. And there are always people who respond, even if it's, and it is often 3 o'clock in the morning when, yeah, you know, my mind is quiet and everything is a mess. And so I wanted this book to be very much like the help that my community has given to me, to make me feel like even when I'm most alone, that's actually probably when I'm least alone, because we all feel so incredibly alone.
Yeah, I guess you're both the giver and the receiver of that then, it feels like, to you. So that's really a wonderful place to be. And again, I think that's very much a product of your own transparency, and people feel, you know, that you say, yeah, sometimes I need help too. And then they're ready to give it because you've given so much of yourself. I love all the funny stories you tell about yourself. I also, you know, my husband and son kid me about, I fall so much that they have a rating system. It's like at the Olympics, and they go, that was a 7.8. You know, come on, you can do better. It's just amazing. And tell the things about the one shoe, losing one shoe. I mean, just fill our listeners in on a little bit of that, because that was great.
So yeah, there's an entire chapter all about the times where I have lost a shoe while wearing them. And you'd think there wouldn't be enough for a chapter, but in fact there are. Because I have rheumatoid arthritis, one of my feet will sort of like swell, and then they'll go back down, and then they'll swell, and then they'll go back down. So my shoes never completely fit right. And so there's this constant thing of me walking out of shoes, and quite often I walk out of them while I'm in an elevator, and then the elevator goes up and then I don't see my shoe again and I have to go search for it. And you know, it's funny because, you know, there are all these just ridiculous stories as they're happening to me. I'm like, this is mortifying. It was embarrassing. And my husband is like, what is wrong with you? But then those end up being the stories that people can relate to, even if they can't relate, because that is ridiculous, but they can relate to this idea that, like, I was mortified. This is ridiculous. But if you can find a way to laugh at it, it makes it so much better. And actually, it was funny. So the first chapter is about memory loss and confusion and all of that. And I think
hole in your head, I think you call it.
Yes, exactly. one of the most interesting stories that isn't included in the book is the fact that I kept thinking, like, I should write this chapter about all the ways that I've lost my shoes while still wearing them. And I was working on it in my head, and I finally kind of came up with, like, I was like, oh, I'm in, you know, list form, and I start working on it, and I get about halfway done, and I'm like, why does this feel familiar? And I go and I look, and I had already started writing the exact same chapter several months before, completely forgotten, and had written it in a completely different way. Like, one was chronological and one was list form. And so I had to go and take these two chapters and sort of, like, go, like, okay, well, what's the best sentence from here? And what's the, but it was so, I was like, okay, honestly, what, how is that even possible that I wrote this chapter twice?
That's funny. Well, it's just, I don't know, doubly good or something. But, you know, as you were talking, Jenny, I was kind of wondering to myself, sometimes I have people who know they can be real resilient and they come across as really resilient to other people. And they'll look at me and say, you know, I get tired of being considered resilient. Do you ever get tired of that?
I don't get tired of being considered resilient because I never feel resilient. It's never something that I relate to. I think it would be different if it was something where I was making a choice, like a conscious effort to battle something. But really all I'm doing is just sharing what's going on with my life. And it can be, you know, really hard and exhausting.
That was really,
I feel like I don't have, yeah, I feel like I don't have a choice because this is the way that I communicate because I'm such an introvert. This is the only way that I can get out the thoughts that are in my head. So I feel very lucky and privileged that people continue to listen to me, even though every time I write something, I'm like, oh, nobody's going to like this. This is awful. And I know some of that is, you know, depression and anxiety and imposter syndrome. But I think everybody sort of deals with that same idea of, like, you know, I'm not good enough. And it can make it an even larger feeling of cognitive dissonance when people are like, you know, you're amazing and you're so funny. And I'm like, I'm so depressed right now. Like, you don't even know. Like, I barely got up to take a shower. You know, I think that's important to keep in mind that you only see this tiny little percentage. So, like, this book took me 5 years to write. So I do think, you know, it's really funny and people say it's really funny and great. But at the same time, like, there were wide, you know, months in between where I'm like, all I can do is just breathe and survive and wait until my brain comes back around again and is funny.
Wow.
Though my head is saying, like, you'll never be funny again. You'll never write again. You'll never have creativity. So learning how to remind myself that depression lies, even when I'm in the middle of those lies, has been a constant battle that it's not fun.
No, it's not fun. Chronic mental illness has absolutely no fun about it. I mean, it takes such a... the resilience it takes. I love Andrew Solomon's quote, the opposite of depression isn't happiness, it's vitality. And having that sense of energy and vitality, and you don't have that consistently. It goes, it comes, it goes. And the mourning when it passes is just so, oh, why can't I get that back? You know, and so, okay, so I want to go back a little bit because there was one sentence that kind of floored me. Knowing you from West Texas, you said, and you were struggling with anxiety as a kid, which again says how long you've been dealing with all this. Mm-hmm. You said, my mother took a job as a cafeteria lady so she'd have the same hours as me. And what I was so struck by was that, you know, again, more typical or more stereotypically typical perhaps would be, come on, Jenny, you know, and it seemed that your mother, I don't know if your father as well, seemed particularly sensitive to you. Is that true? That sentence seems to say it is.
Yes. Yeah. You know, my dad has dealt with mental illness for most of his life as well. But I didn't really know that growing up because when I was growing up, it was something that you would kind of hide and you weren't supposed to be out about it. And so I think that she understood more than she thought, just because she understood what my dad had been, had gone through. And then I think part of it was, poor thing, she just really kind of had no choice because I was so violently sick when I was, when I had this separation anxiety where, you know, she would be like, okay, well, I can't really get a job anywhere else because you're throwing up all the time and I have to come get you. It was very nice about it. But yeah, there was still always that in the back of my mind of like, why can't I just be like my sister? My sister can go to slumber parties and she can go, you know, on vacation with my grandparents and she can leave the house and go to school and just do the things that normal people don't even think twice about, the energy that it takes. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, again, sort of talking about the chronicity, I mean, that started really early on for you. And it's amazing that you, and I want to get to TMS here in a second, but I do have one. I've got so many things I want to ask you about. The story of the fountain really got to me, you know, as I have had anxiety disorder myself. You know, I've certainly accepted it. I used to not talk, and I used to be ashamed of it, not talk about it. And I realize it's given me a lot of humility, a different kind of humility than I think I would have ever had. And so I actually have appreciated it because of that. But if you tell the story of the fountain, it was so beautiful because it's, to me, it's really seeing the gifts that certain struggles can give you. And you went through this series of, can't everybody, oh, I know, I'm not going to tell the story. I'd much rather you tell the story.
Sure. So this was when my second book had come out and I was on tour, was in New York. And when I am on tour, I can't do really anything other than just tour because I'm so exhausted from it. Mm-hmm. But I was in New York and you could like look out and see, you know, Times Square and Carnegie Hall and, you know, all these places that you think like don't exist. And then you're there and then they do exist. And I kept thinking, like, they're outside my window. I need to just go downstairs and just go out in the street. And I could not myself leave my room because my anxiety was just so strong. And so I felt like a failure. And I sat down on the floor and I opened up the window, which for some reason, all of the windows in New York open. So weird. That does not happen in the South in hotels. It's so strange. But I opened up the window and I was like, at least this makes me feel like I'm kind of, you know, there. I can feel the breeze and I can hear the people. Then I looked down and there was this fountain and it looks like a dandelion, and each one of the dandelion, it kind of sprays off. And I looked and the water was creating this like rainbow fire, this prism of just beautiful rainbow mist. And I'd never seen anything like it before. And I looked to see if the other people down on the street were seeing the same thing because it was so amazing. Like I grabbed my camera and I was taking pictures of it and everybody kept walking by like it was nothing. And I just thought, well, maybe they're just so used to it. But no, I realized that it was because of the angle of where I was up high in the building that I was the only person that could see it. And there was something so wonderful about the fact that it was on this path that I got to see something really beautiful that my anxiety gifted me accidentally that I wouldn't have seen if I had been on the streets.
I just kind of got chills when I heard that. And it is such a interesting thing to ask people to look around their own lives and try to see if there's anything, any perceptions or experiences that they think that they've had that are tied or linked very closely with their struggles and with the part that maybe right in that moment they're even hating that they have, or why can't I do whatever other people can do, and then yet, you know, you have this ability to see this. And it was just this message of look around and make sure you're not missing what is, you know, and what can be there for you. It was really beautiful.
You know, one of the things that I have gotten, I think, from, I mean, I wouldn't choose mental illness because it's exhausting, but I think it does quite often help you to have a deeper well of compassion for other people. Mm-hmm. You can see yourself in them, and you know that your own struggle isn't as obvious. And so it's easier, I think, to look and say, everyone has their own private struggle that may seem so simple or even non-existent to me, but that they're battling themselves right now.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about battle, because between your emotional, mental issues, struggles, diagnoses, as well as your physical ones with RA and other autoimmune issues that you have, you really talked about just the shit show that all that is for you. And the what I wrote some things down, haggling with insurance, especially when they say things that mimic what depression says to you. Side effects of meds, doctors not thinking systemically, like, you know, they treat one little issue in the problem and finally someone says, let's look at the whole thing. And so how have you kept up your drive to deal with that just mishmash and what can seem often like a very non-caring, if you don't fit in this hole exactly, then, you know, you don't get to do what people in that, you know, we cannot check this box about you. So therefore you don't get this treatment or you don't get this opportunity. And how have you kept up your, what would even be the word for it? Stubbornness, persistence.
I think persistence is a good word for it, because you do have to be persistent or else you don't get the care that you deserve. You know, our healthcare system right now is in crisis, and anybody who's had to deal with insurance already knows how absolutely ridiculous it is trying to get the most basic things covered, and how many appeal after appeal you have to go through, and all of the, you know, the incredible amount of work that you have to do just for the basic stuff. You know, I struggled with trying to get my antidepressants covered with my last insurance, to the point where I wrote a whole chapter about it. And then I switched to, they finally were like, okay, I guess you do need them and we will cover them. And this was after a year of fighting and paying, you know, $300 a month for, you know, antidepressants. And it's just so crazy.
Yeah, one pill.
Yeah.
One pill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, this was the whole, this is three. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank God for that.
Exactly. But then I switched to another insurance company at the end of last year because my husband changed jobs, and it started all over again. So I was like, yep, it's not just one of them, to the point where, I mean, what is this, March? I'm still paying, you know, $200 to $300 a month because I just got a call from them today and they were like, oh, no, we are approving it. I was like, really? Because I got a letter from you saying that you're not approving it. They're like, really? I sent that. I'm like, you did. You sent you. Oh, my gosh. What? It takes an enormous amount of energy, which is something that you don't have when you are having to fight because you're sick or you're, you know, especially if you're dealing with depression. Depression is already telling you that you don't deserve treatment and this is taking money away from your family and you should be able just to smile and get over it. And then that's mimicked by the same information that you get from your insurance company saying, like, we don't think this is medically necessary. And no, you're making too much of a big deal out of it. So the thing that has been the most helpful for me is to look at it that I'm not just battling for myself. I'm battling every single person who's dealing with the same thing. Because I'm really lucky that because I have a more open-ended schedule, I can stay on the phone with them for 4 hours time. And they're depending on you not to do that. They want you to be able to say, this is not worth my time, and give up. And I don't. I have a, you know, three-page single space document just of the people that I've talked to in the last 3 months, of every single person. And when they're like, I don't know, we're gonna have to transfer you, and you expect after 4 hours on the call that I'd give up, and instead I'm like, yeah, okay, transfer me. I want to hear somebody else say this again. Say it out. See how it sounds. So that is one. The other thing is relying on someone else to, you know, share your story and have them say, oh, you're totally right. Yes, you should have that covered. Because you start to think like, well, maybe I am being, you know, ridiculous asking for basic health care. And then the other thing is knowing that it's okay to sometimes take a little break. There are times when it'll be 2 weeks in between when I start, you know, calling the insurance company again, because I know I just don't have money for it. So, you know, give yourself permission to take a break, or even if you have, you know, a kid or a parent or a spouse who can help on your behalf, sometimes it can help. And then get the doctors involved as much as possible. Although my doctors have gone to the point where they're like, this is exhausting and we don't even want to deal with this anymore. Like, I feel so bad for every single person who has to fight for typically 4 months before you get your stuff approved. And then, you know, that 8 months later, they're going to be like, hey, it's a new year. You got to start all over again. You're like, that's right. I've already done this.
That's right. Well, and you talk a lot in the book about Victor, and Victor is your husband. And you talk a lot about laughter, and there was certainly a lot of innuendo and fun and what y'all have to say to one another. And it's really fun in the book. And I, by the way, in the intro, I did talk about the name of the book. I haven't even mentioned the name of the book yet. It's broken. So anyway, Victor said one time when you had the TMS, and I want you to talk about the TMS a little bit. He was wondering if you'd still need him because you were so much better. And he said to you, you're a bad risk, but one I'm willing to take. I think that was before the TMS. Mm-hmm. And then your doctor said, you're going to be fine with TMS because, quote, I think you'll be fine no matter what. You don't let your pain go to waste.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to talk about the TMS and your doctor's comments about that. How did you take that? You don't let your pain go to waste.
Honestly, it was one of the nicest things that anybody has ever said to me.
I was floored.
Oh my gosh, yes. And in particular, because I had fought so much along with him to get this treatment covered. And he was so kind about it. And I mean, for months and months of him talking to, you know, demanding, you know, let me talk to another doctor. Let me talk to, he was amazing.
He's been a warrior for you.
Absolutely,
he's been a
warrior. Absolutely. And that makes such a difference. So I wanted to do TMS because my doctor had recommended it, and it's transcranial magnetic stimulation. That's basically where they put, it sounds ridiculous, they put like magnets on your head, and then the waves, they sort of tap in and they can kind of change your brain in a positive way.
They create new neural pathways, supposedly.
Exactly. So there's one side is for your depression, the other side is for anxiety. And they only do it for typically treatment-resistant depression. So you have to have basically failed a ton of different treatments, which I had. And when I finally had it done, which like a third of the people that get it, they don't have any reaction at all. A third of the people have some reaction, and a third go into complete remission, which I can't even imagine what that would be like. But I was in that middle third where I would say it took me about 75% out of like a very deep depression that I had been in for months and months. And it really helped with my anxiety to the point that I was able to, for about 9 months, get off of my anti-anxiety medication, which is
incredible.
I mean, if you're someone who has been on it for like a decade or longer, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I think I actually don't need to have this filled for 9 months. That's amazing. But it was sort of difficult in a lot of ways because I wasn't used to being very stable and sort of independent and being able to drive myself around and do the things that I wanted to do. And so it did create this strange,
huge new dynamic between you and Victor and your daughter too.
Yes. And you think it's all going to be, you know, positive and happy. And my doctor had said, like, you need to be aware that it often can cause a lot of issues because one person is so used to being reliant on the other person. You can create this, you know, like not really healthy sort of balance, and, you know, refinding that balance can be hard. And it was, you know, Victor really had a hard with, you know, he was like, it feels like you don't need me as much. And, you know, and my daughter was just like, this is so great, but what's going on here? Like, how do you suddenly have energy? This feels like a different mom, and what's going on? But we got through it. And it was, in the end, it was a very positive experience to the point where about a year later, when I started to feel down again, I went in for another round. And honestly, it's been about a year since the last time. If this wasn't COVID times, I probably would be right having another 3-month treatment, because for me, it was uncomfortable. It was expensive. It takes a lot of time. I'm very lucky I was able to get it done. And it was worth it.
I've had several patients do it, and I've had about that third kind of response to it too. So, but it is one of the new things that the psychiatric community does have to offer, and a lot more of that is happening. So I thought when you said, oh, I'm just really considering this treatment, I was so hoping it was TMS, because I just think that's really cool that you could write about it and educate people about it. So we mentioned your daughter a little bit, and you may not want to talk about her, but, you know, I know I have a lot of listeners who worry about how their depression or anxiety or PTSD or whatever they're dealing with, you know, how their child is dealing with it, and whether they're going to have it genetically, and is that their fault, and blah, 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 blah. So, and not blah, 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 like discounting it. It just goes on and on and on.
Yes.
And I do remember your daughter kind of congratulating you and kind of being, Mom, you've done good, you know. And so what has that been? And again, if this is a little sensitive, we'll just...
Oh, no, it's good. I don't talk about my daughter's, her personal mental health journey, because I think that's her story to tell. And even though I know she wouldn't mind me talking about it, she's 16, and I really think you need to be an adult before you 100% know what it is that you're getting into.
Sure.
But here are some things that I can share. First off, that especially when she was too young for me to really explain to her what depression was, and so instead I would just say, I just don't feel good. I'm just a little sick. And I felt like I was failing as a mother because I couldn't cook and I couldn't clean and I couldn't do like so many things. And I would just sit on the couch. And so what I would do is I would turn on like Doctor Who or, you know, something that I knew that we both would enjoy together. And I felt like, well, at least I'm spending some time with her. And I felt really guilty about all of that time. But then as she got older and she was old enough that I was starting to be her like what mental health is and what depression is and this is how it affects me, and she didn't have any of these memories of like, oh, my mom was a slug on the couch. Instead, she had these memories of spending time with her, of like,
watching Doctor Who.
Exactly. You weren't off, you know, like cooking and cleaning and whatever. You were sitting right there next to me, and, you know, and letting me braid your hair. And So yeah, so I would say, first of all, we probably judge ourselves way more harshly. I think the other thing
I would agree there. All you people who deal with shame, please listen.
Exactly. I would say the other thing is, I think it can be very helpful to talk to your kids about your own struggles, whether it be with, you know, mental illness or whatever it is, because it, first of all, gives them permission to come to you to talk about when they're having struggles. And also it lets them realize that you are human and sometimes you make mistakes, and that gives them permission to be human and to make mistakes. I will say that I think something that parents in general maybe struggle with their own kids is that we have an idea in our head of what mental illness looks like, because we are so, you know, ingrained with, this is what anxiety looks like for me or how it presents for me, that sometimes it can be a little hard to recognize it in your children because maybe it presents a totally different way. Keeping that open mind and just really listening as much as you can, I think, can be really helpful.
You know, what I've said to folks is that, I mean, anxiety runs in my family. I found an old clipping about my grandfather who died. He died when my dad was 15. But they were talking about that he would try to get up and speak, and he would get all red-faced and he couldn't make his words very well. And then they would laugh and he'd sit down. Well, he had performance anxiety. You know, is what it sounds like. He was having a panic attack, which was fascinating for me to see. But, you know, what I have learned is that when I began then seeing my son struggle some with anxiety, and his was more, he needed things placed a certain way, especially when he was young and that kind of thing, I said, okay, you know what? I know this is not my kind of anxiety, but I also do know what it's like to learn how to accept it in yourself. And just to say, if I don't accept it, I can't manage it. If I hate it, I can't manage it.
Exactly.
So I think that's so important, and for folks to remember that you have, if you've accepted whatever struggles you have, then again, as you point out very aptly, yours may not be exactly what theirs are, but you know, that acceptance process is something that you've got down and can offer to them.
Yes. And also just recognizing that the tools that they have may not necessarily be the tools that you have. And you know, that's like, for me, I have, you know, these really specific things that I'm like, oh, this is what helps me with depression or anxiety. And I call it like my tool chest of like, okay, well, have I had enough to drink today? First of all, you know, have I gotten outside? Have I, you know, and so I do like all the basic things. And if those don't, like, okay, then we go to the next level. Then we go to the next level. And so that's the very easy thing for me. But then, you know, maybe your child's maybe like, oh, here's the thing that I need is I need to wear headphones because I'm overly stimulated. And you're like, no, take the headphones off. And I just want to see your pretty face. And what are you doing? And you have to recognize that, like, everybody's got their own tools. And just because theirs look different, it doesn't mean that they're not as valid.
And the world has changed a little bit.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
Well, I have one last question, and then I'm very appreciative of your time and realize you're in a series of these interviews. Again, the book is called Broken in the Best Possible Way, and it is wonderful. I hope this is a series and this isn't the last in the series, but I'd like for you to talk about therapy a little bit, because I started the Self-Work podcast because I just thought there was so much misinformation and misunderstanding about therapy, and I wanted to try to get on the air and talk like a normal person and, you know, laugh and just present a very approachable therapeutic kind of situation. Not that a podcast is therapy, but I wanted to try to do that. So I'm interested. I've asked almost everybody that you're only my like sixth guest. So,
oh my goodness.
So what would you say the role therapy has played for you?
Well, you know, when I first started in therapy, it was therapy only without medication, which was not really a good fit. And then after that, when I realized that my depression is more clinical depression and that it wasn't necessarily something traumatic that had happened, they were like, oh, you should just see a psychiatrist. And and just get medication. And that didn't work for me either. It helped, but I needed more than that, because even though, you know, I wouldn't say anything terribly traumatic has happened to me that I need to, you know, talk through and work through, every single day something happens that I need to talk through.
And I hate to tell you, but I think having a goat burned up or barbecued backyard, I'm not sure what that's
okay. a little traumatic for me. It's a little traumatic. What I found is that it is incredibly helpful to have someone that you can trust, that you can talk to about. For me, I deal a lot with intrusive thoughts and obsessive thoughts. And sometimes the only way that I can get rid of them is to talk to somebody who is not a friend and not family and can like legitimately say, okay, that's crazy. Or, that is something you need to be concerned about. I have found it just so incredibly helpful. One of the things though that I do wish that I would have known right from the very beginning is that just like, not every teacher is right for you and one's going to work and one isn't. Same thing with therapy, where like if you go to therapy and you're like, this isn't working, that doesn't necessarily mean that therapy doesn't work for you. It just means maybe that therapist isn't the right. And that's okay. Like, it's the same thing why you have someone who's your best friend and someone who you don't like at all. Like, everybody has different needs. So I would say, I wish I would have known when I was younger that if you're not having it like a good rapport with your therapist, it's totally okay to say, I don't think this is totally working. You're not going to hurt their feelings. No. In fact, they probably picked up on the fact that you're not maybe sharing as much. So it doesn't hurt. It's like dating, you know, you go out and then when you find the right person, you're like, oh, finally, I can talk and I can, okay, I feel like this person hears me.
Right. Yes, I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and I don't think any therapist is. So that's a very helpful thing to say. I've had some really bad therapy and I've had some good therapy. And so, you know, I've had some excellent therapy, in fact. And that's why I'm a therapist. That's why I'm a psychologist, because it really changed my life. So now you've opened a bookstore?
Yes.
That's exciting.
I was like, let's see. What's a way to make money? Open an independent bookstore in the middle of a pandemic. I'm pretty sure we're probably the longest running bookstore that has never opened its doors to customers. We've been open for longer than a year, and still nobody can come in. The good thing though is that we have a really good community, and so we have tons of people who, you know, order off the website and they do curbside. And then I started this book club called the Fantastic Strangelings Book Club, where once a month I pick a book that I think is not going to get enough attention, and we all read it together, and we have like thousands of members now, and they are sustaining us and, you know, paying for the rents and for our employees and I feel so, so lucky to have this beautiful one store that no one has ever been to, but is still supported.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. That is really great. And I'm sure those authors really, really appreciate that too, because having published a book back in late 2019 myself, I know those fears. Nobody will read it.
It's so hard. It's so hard. And you put it out in the world and you don't know. And the publishers are afraid to, you know, should we put it out? Should we, let's not print too many. And then there's not enough. And then, yeah. It's a scary time to be an author. I mean, so it's a scary time to be anybody, I guess. Really.
I think so. Well, I want to thank you so very much again. I've been looking forward to this. I mean, y'all contacted me maybe a couple of weeks ago and I was like, I'm getting on this. Yes, yes, yes. And when does your book come out?
It's April 6th, I think, or maybe the 5th. I don't remember. I should know that.
Okay. So thank you, and be well. And I'm so glad that you share what you do. It is very, very meaningful. Lori Gottlieb, I noticed on the cover, said about you that she feels like, you know, you are a clinician, a fellow clinician. And I really liked her comment because I thought, you know, you're so knowledgeable about it by now that it's a lot of what you have to say is steeped in your experience, and you have a lot of wisdom to share. And I believe we all do, but you know, you're kind enough and talented enough to share it with all of us in a way that just makes us guffaw at times. So, and then also, and the reason why I wanted to bring up the quotes that I did is because there are also times my eyes teared a little bit when I could recognize how much you were trying to say, you are not alone. And that is such an important message to people.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You're welcome. You too. Bye-bye. My many thanks and gratitude to Jenny. I so enjoyed that conversation, and I know that all of you did too. Again, her book is Broken in the Best Possible Way. It's only her latest in a series of really incredible books where she's very open and honest and funny and extremely caring for those who are reading the book. She also has a blog called The Bloggess. She has a book club that she said something about. I'm sure it's on The Bloggess. And I sure hope you check her out. Thanks to those of you who've left ratings and reviews on Amazon for my own book, Perfectly Hidden Depression. I have to say I got an email today, very early this morning, from a woman who's extremely successful. She comes from a line of very successful women. But she told me that she's miserable, she's lonely, accomplishment has brought her nothing, she's tired of deflecting and controlling. She's actually grown more and more depressed, sought treatment finally, but that's when she found Perfectly Hidden Depression. And I don't say this out of pride. I say it to reach those of you who may be in her boat. She said to me, "Your book is saving my life." So please, if you're like her, if all you do is deflect and control, then perhaps Perfectly Hidden Depression is for you or for someone you love. You can reach me at drmargaretrutherford.com. You can email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Please join me in my Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/selfwork. And if you subscribe on my website, you'll receive a weekly newsletter, which is a great way of just keeping up with what I'm doing or things that I think you might be interested in. Again, my gratitude to all of you for listening. Please take very good care. I'm Dr. Margaret. And this has been Self-Work.